Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 616, titled Going Native, Part 3, Homeland Insecurity. This is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2007. And we're going to plunge right in with sort of Volksgruppen Rechte around the world. That, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, that roughly translates as the rights of ethnic peoples or ethnic minorities. And what we're looking at is the use of that generally often noble or usually or very frequently noble cause for what is ultimately a very ignoble purpose, which is in order to break up or really to conquer, to subdue larger countries by causing fractiousness among some of the ethnic minorities. We're going to plunge right in now and remember that the UNPO, this nice cuddly-sounding, you know, progressive-sounding champion of ethnic minorities, many of whose causes are altogether noble, but that group's headed up by Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the House of Habsburg, married into the Thyssen Industrial Empire, one of the epicenters of the Underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network. And the House of Habsburg, of course, one of the major crowned houses or royal houses of Europe. And in many ways, they view themselves as the heirs to the Austro-Hungarian, to the Holy Roman Empire. And in taking a look at how people like the Habsburgs and other pan-Germanists, really, and quasi-pan-Germanic geopoliticians, to coin a term, how they look at things, their idea of Volksgruppen Rechte, comes out something like this. This, too, comes from GermanForeignPolicy.com. It's called The Ordering of a Superstate. It is from August 29th of 2006. It's dateline Berlin and Magdeburg. It reads, "The medieval Europe-wide German Reich is a valid model for the Union of European countries today," so says the Berlin State Minister of Culture, Bernd Neumann. According to him, the memory of the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation reveals an inner historical consistency, unquote, with the founding and steady expansion of the European Union. These remarks are a preparation for the festivities in Berlin for the 50th anniversary of the European Economic Community, or EEC, to which the Federal Chancellor, Angela Merkel, has invited the German Pope, Joseph Ratzinger. Ratzinger is a committed supporter of the imperial ideal, or Reichsidee, and is to speak on the spiritual foundations of Europe in the German capital. This government offensive to revitalize the imperial ideal will underline the German leadership of the EU and confirm fears in France, Great Britain, and almost all the states of Eastern Europe. Sections of the German elites are warning against an all-too-public assertion of German hegemony. As the Berlin State Culture Minister Bernd Neumann said, the German Reich of the Middle Ages can, from today's viewpoint, unquote, serve as a valid model of the functioning order of a superstate, unquote. Neumann took this opportunity when he opened an exhibition last Sunday, August 27th, which is dedicated to this supposed historical exemplar, the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation, 962-1806. Because of the prominence of the exhibition, partly in the state-controlled historical museum in Berlin, the individual stands and total content of the exhibition are attracting remarkable public interest. The culture minister's intervention has strengthened the political charisma of the exhibition. He is a committed supporter of the federal chancellor. It touches on every great trend, which makes very clear to us the inner historical legitimacy and consistency of European unification, unquote, said Neumann on Sunday. The explicit aim of the organizers is to examine the past of old Europe in a time of fundamental inner and external reorientation, unquote. According to the organizers, they have traced structures and developmental processes which are of great significance to the federal construction of Europe, unquote. The public references to the structures of the medieval Reich, which are evident in Neumann's position, used to be the province of the extreme right, or confined to clerical/conservative circles, at any rate since the Second World War. This was the opinion of the CSU, or the Christian Social Union, politician and grandson of the Austrian Kaiser, Otto von Habsburg, who made it known at the end of the 70s that the European integration of our times follows the grand outline and principles of the Reich, which survived 1806, because they are of lasting validity, unquote. Similarly, the Pan-Europa Union, an association of EU supporters close to the CSU, insisted that the eternal function of the Reich must be renewed in the Europe of tomorrow in the interest of the West, unquote. Similarly, Joseph Ratzinger, the present Pope Benedict XVI, acknowledged that the origins of today's EU should acknowledge a, quote, common imperial ideal, or Reichsidee, unquote. In recent years, conservative newspapers have opened their columns to new advocacy for the Reich, unquote. By the way, Ratzinger, very close to Opus Dei. Ratzinger, his rise, basically, from the Hitler Youth and the Wehrmacht on up through the Vatican, looks circumstantially, in a way, to have been shepherded by the Underground Reich. He was the real power behind JP2. And Ratzinger's a very, very interesting fellow indeed. Otto von Habsburg is somebody that we've looked at in connection with the aforementioned Karl von Habsburg. Otto is Karl von Habsburg's father. Otto von Habsburg is the father of the head of the UNPO. Otto von Habsburg is also a member of the Free Rudolf Hess Society. He also is an ultra-right-wing member of the European Parliament and someone who has long, basically, lobbied for a revanchist view of or approach to the Third Reich and its history. And again, so this Otto von Habsburg here, who again is calling for a return to the viewpoint of the Holy Roman Empire. Otto von Habsburg is the father of Karl von Habsburg. And we've taken a look at the history of Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict XVI, in a For the Record show titled Der Panzerkardinal. I believe that's For the Record 508. I think it's called The Vatican Rag Part 2. It's called Der Panzerkardinal, and certainly, so read about Ratzinger in that broadcast. Now, returning to the viewpoint here of the European Union as sort of a predecessor, sort of a nation, a larval Holy Roman Empire II, so to speak. By the way, in terms of Holy Roman Empire I and Pan-Germanism, go to the Spitfire website, go to the books, the aforementioned mini-library of anti-fascist books. Check out the book The Thousand-Year Conspiracy, Secret Germany Behind the Mask. That talks about the history of Pan-Germanism, the Teutonic Knights and their association with the Vatican and the wars in particular against the Muslims over the centuries, and how that figures into the formation of some of these political currents. Now, returning again to Holy Roman Empire II, so to speak, a renascent Pan-Germanism, this is Volksgruppen Rechte Underground Reich style. The papal speech, talking more about Volksgruppen Rechte and Holy Roman Empire II, as the Speaker of the Bundestag, Norbert Lammert, of the CDU, has now informed us, he has invited a supporter of the imperial ideal, Joseph Ratzinger, to Berlin next year. The invitation was extended to Ratzinger last Monday by the Federal Chancellor at a reception in Castel Gandolfo. The German Pope will be in Berlin to attend the festivities for the 50th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, and will grace the proceedings with a speech. The German press already reports that the religious consecration will validate the European Economic Community, or EEC, and will be dedicated to the spiritual foundations of Europe's political unification, unquote. The invitation legitimates the Reich concept of a stable cooperation of church and state. It will be a particular affront to France, a founding member of the EEC. Paris is committed to secularism and the separation of church and state has been a principle of French public life since the Revolution of 1789. The Berlin Culture Minister's speech of last Sunday will also affront those European states lying to the east and south of Germany's borders. The minister made an obvious allusion to Poland and the Czech Republic when he said that the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation was, quote, a part of the past of many European states, unquote. According to Neumann, quote, Germany and Central Europe are historically and culturally indissolubly linked together, unquote. By this, the state minister recalled the earlier German hegemony to the east of Germany's present frontiers, which the Federal Republic has tried to reassert since 1990. The reawakening of the Reich myth has run into sharp criticism. In a press interview, the historian Heinrich August Winkler pointed to the significance of the Reich myth for Nazi propaganda. According to Winkler, it was decisive, quote, that the Reich was always something else and more than a normal national state, unquote. When in 1939 Hitler proclaimed the protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia over the rump of Czechoslovakia, legal historians of pan-German views confirmed that this act was quite in line with the old imperial ideal, which had always been supranational. Winkler warns of new tensions between European states, quote, incantation of the Reich, unquote, would unavoidably create fears of German demands if it became again the model for the ordering of Europe, unquote. As criticism of the well-known historian Winkler has been prominently publicized for 3 weeks, the minister's speech can be clearly understood as an undoubtedly intentional rebuttal on behalf of German Reich propaganda. So this is the other side of the coin. I want to recall for old-time listeners to these broadcasts that, and by the way, I put myself in the old-time listener category. I want to recall the broadcast that I did with Professor Stauffer, an expert on German foreign policy, Germania and Pan-Germania in particular. And he spoke about, even while Germany has actively promoted centrifugal ethnic dynamics in countries whose resources it covets and whose weakness would benefit their access to that country's resources, at the same time, Germany has not practiced what it has been preaching. We looked in our conversations with Professor Stauffer, among other things, at the German suppression of two ethnic groups, the North Frisians and the Sorbs, the former an ethnic Danish minority, the latter a Slavic people, not the Serbs, by the way, the Sorbs, S-O-R-B-S, they're a Slavic minority with, like the North Frisians, their own distinct tongue, which they, like the North Frisians, were forbidden from speaking. So even as Volksgruppen Rechte is the war cry of these SS-generated and German government-supported organizations that are backing a free South Tyrol and a free Tibet and projecting some of the old Nazi and SS-linked geopolitics vis-a-vis Tibet and Mongolia and Inner Mongolia forward through the decades, even as they're preaching the rights of minorities, they're not practicing what they are preaching vis-a-vis groups like the North Frisians and the Sorbs. One of the things that I've spoken about in, among other programs, for the record, 180, 332, and 465, and that is the effective Nazi penetration of the American political process. This has taken place through basically sort of classic fifth column activity and infiltration. Fascism is not a stranger to America. Many of the financial pillars of international fascism, including the Third Reich, are to be found within the ranks of the American business elite and the political elite. Many of them tried to establish fascism in the United States. In a recent broadcast, we took a look at the 1934 coup attempt, and we visited with the heroic Jules Archer, who at 90 years young has republished his book, The Plot Against the White, Plot to Seize the White House, about the 1934 coup attempt. Through the Crusade for Freedom, a program not only to bring Nazi geopolitical policy vis-a-vis the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe into the American foreign policy arsenal, so to speak, but also to incorporate Nazi and SS elements into the American political infrastructure in order to harden it from an anti-communist point of view. The Crusade for Freedom saw the importation of, among other elements, entire SS intelligence units brought complete and intact into the United States for the purposes of not only anti-communism, but to counteract undue, quote, Jewish, unquote, political influence. Those, in combination with other Central and Eastern European fascist elements, evolved into a major element of the Republican Party. And under a fellow named Otto von Bolschfing, at one point Adolf Eichmann's superior in SS, executed Nazi policy toward the Jews. At one point, Otto von Bolschfing was brought into the United States, and Otto von Bolschfing and his protege, a woman named Helena von Damm, ultimately were able to win a very decisive influence as sort of the point element for this Nazi branch of the Republican Party. By the way, that branch was hatched, it was the brainchild of Alan Dulles. It was put into effect, this Nazification of the Republican Party, by Alan Dulles' protege Richard Nixon. It was fronted by a then B-grade Hollywood movie actor named Ronald Reagan. And the State Department machinations to bring these people into the United States were executed by William Casey, later Ronald Reagan's campaign manager, and also his CIA director. The Republican Nazi branch was became a permanent, not just an election year, but a permanent fixture of the Republican Party under the stewardship of the elder George Bush when he was chairman of the Republican National Committee. Ultimately, Otto von Bolschfing, Adolf Eichmann's superior, SS man, and CIA spy, was able to shepherd his protege, a woman named Helena von Damm, in a position to manipulate the lists of personnel from which Ronald Reagan and later the ranks of the Republican Party staffed their administration. So in many ways, we could think of the von Damm-von Bolschfing connection stemming from the Crusade for Freedom as sort of an underground Reich Johnny Appleseed program, and many of the sprouts that have issued forth from this sowing are beginning to manifest themselves, have been manifesting themselves for a number of years. We're seeing quite a few of them on the world scene today. Now, again, I mention this because this, in a nutshell, has helped to pave the way for the introduction of Nazi geopolitical ideas into the American foreign policy arsenal, so to speak. The Crusade for Freedom, among other things, incorporated the Nazi Ost Institute viewpoint that the old Soviet Union should be broken up into its constituent ethnic republics. That happened. And we're also going to take a look now at another example of Volksgruppenrechte, and this too is the breaking up, or the proposed, or at least theoretical breaking up, of larger countries into smaller ethnic countries or ethnic groupings. This, however, taking place in the Middle East, and the country that's exercising Volksgruppenrechte, perhaps as sort of a synthesis of American policy, which really America at this point could be thought of as sort of a hijacked airplane with underground Reich hijackers, and although we're being used for a purpose, it's not to further the causes of Americana. This, too, is from GermanForeignPolicy.com. It's from September 8th of 2006. It's called Dirty Little Secret. American military circles are recommending a reorganization of all nations in the Middle East along ethnic lines. Loss of territory and drawing new borders will affect Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, and Pakistan, among others. Through the complete dissolution of states, new actors will be created in international law along the lines of ethnic and religious affiliation. According to this plan, a country by the name of Free Kurdistan, unquote, will be created three times the size of Syria from territory taken from today's northern Iraq and eastern Turkey. The remainder of Iraq will be divided, the capital Baghdad smashed. Iran would lose extensive areas of its coast, as well as territory bordering on Pakistan, where a free Baluchistan, unquote, is to be founded. Mecca and Medina, until now located in Saudi Arabia, will be promoted to capitals of an Islamic sacred state, unquote, that will extend to the southern borders of Jordan, doubling the surface of the Hashemite territory, or Greater Jordan. This ethnic reorganization is depicted on several U.S. maps that the historian Dr. Pierre Hilliard of Paris has now published in France. In his talk with GermanForeignPolicy.com, Hilliard deems that, quote, German policy plays an important role in propagating these ideas, unquote. GermanForeignPolicy.com publishes for the first time in Germany the U.S. cartography. Recommendations for a complete overthrow of the prevailing state order were published in the Armed Forces Journal, or AFJ, of June of 2006, a magazine of the Army Times Publishing Company, unquote. This enterprise publishes at least 10 military magazines, including Army Times and Navy Times, which is owned by the Gannett Media Group of Virginia, USA. In a self-portrait, the operational income of the group, to which the well-known Daily USA is also affiliated, is figured at $7.6 U.S. billion dollars in 2005. Under the title, Redrawing the Middle East Map, unquote, the Armed Forces Journal shows its readers two maps with identical territorial outlines, with one before, unquote, showing the current border situation to then develop the future or after image of the Middle East. According to the accompanying article, the Muslim world is in a situation generating hatred and violence, in part as a consequence of its colonial heritage and partially due to its own fault, which can only be corrected with radical border alterations. The redrawing of the boundaries would have to follow ethnic affinities with religious communalism, writes the author Ralph Peters, a retired military officer. Peters makes no secret of the fact that he has experience in the field of intelligence. According to information gleaned by GermanForeignPolicy.com, Peters last visited Baghdad in the spring of 2006. The cartography published under Peters' name recommends the breakup of the current Saudi Arabia, which must accept the largest loss of territory. This radical transformation is explained with the political situation of the Saudi rulers, who are not only one of the world's most bigoted and oppressive regimes, unquote, but also that their vast oil wealth is completely unearned, unquote. To obtain true justice, according to the Armed Forces Journal, the oil fields today on the southwest Saudi coast must be assigned to Yemen. But not just Saudi control over resources, Riyadh's religious influence over the holy sites Mecca and Medina is also to be weakened. Therefore, what had been the Prophet Muhammad's area of activity are to be administered by an Islamic sacred state, unquote, which will have an enormous territory, but no continuous central government, since it will be ruled by a rotating council representative of the world's major Muslim schools and movements. The U.S. military author offers the Kurdish separatists of Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran 100% territorial surplus. These states will lose substantial chunks of territory to the Shamira Free Kurdistan, whose founding can no longer be postponed. A Free Kurdistan stretching from Diyarbakir of Turkey through Tabriz of Iran would be the most pro-Western state between Bulgaria and Japan. Are the benevolent motives behind the territorial amputation of several UN member states, as described in the Armed Forces Journal. In order to wrest control over the Persian Gulf and its wealth in oil from Iran, the entire coastal flank of the country would go to a not-yet-founded partial state of the former Iraq. In this way, both opponents to the presumption of Western rule will be deprived of the material basis of their autonomy, around which they must compete against each other. Whereas Iraq will have ceased to exist, Iran would lose a great deal of territory to unified Azerbaijan, Free Kurdistan, the Arab Shia state, and another Shamira, a Free Baluchistan, but would gain the provinces around Herat in today's Afghanistan. As French historian Pierre Hilliard judges, this ethnicist aggression carried out by Western powers is being decisively promoted through the foreign policy of Germany. Hilliard refers to continuous efforts by German front organizations seeking to remodel the Middle East, and in this combination mentions specifically the activities of the Bertelsmann Foundation. The foundation annually organizes forums, or Kronberg talks, on the Middle East, where discussions center around a complete transformation of the political, economic, and religious institutions, unquote, of the Muslim resource states, with the objective of coupling them to the Euro-Atlantic axis, unquote. Hilliard explained in an interview with GermanForeignPolicy.com. Well, the Bertelsmann Foundation is an extension of the Bertelsmann Enterprise. That is the publishing outfit that dominates English language publishing through its control of, among other outlets, Random House. It also was the publishing house for the SS. Its founder, Heinrich Mohn, was a member of the SS, and the house historian for Bertelsmann, again, that dominates English language publishing. A fellow named Dirk Bavendam has published a series of books, the most recent, merely in 1998, blaming World War II on basically U.S. imperialism, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Jewish control over the United States, the media in particular. Interesting view of World War II. So the Bertelsmann Foundation, apparently one of the ideological founts that may have been a source for this information. But ultimately, it would not surprise me if the United States itself, after a political and or economic catastrophe, and I think that is altogether possible, it may be the United States itself that is the focal point of dissolution. I spoke about that near the end of For the Record program number 550, and imagine after the United States, say, was destroyed by either an economic collapse or earthquakes and or storms or other catastrophes attendant upon global warming, how many institutions or how many peoples might begin to increase their centripetal latitude. One of the groups of people that the UNPO has been championing are the rights of Native Hawaiians. Again, an example of a group of people whose cause is altogether noble, but even though they have historically been fairly thoroughly screwed, if they start hooking up with the von Habsburgs and the UNPO, they're going to get royally screwed. The following from the San Francisco Chronicle this past week: Native Hawaiians should regain some of the self-governance powers lost when the island's queen was overthrown more than a century ago, the House decided Wednesday. The White House threatened a veto, saying the legislation that passed by a 261-153 vote would divide Americans, quote, along suspect lines of race and ethnicity, unquote. The bill would give the 400,000 people nationwide of Native Hawaiian ancestry the right to form a governing entity that could negotiate with the state and federal governments over such issues as control of natural resources, lands, and assets. The Interior Secretary would have to approve that governing body. So perhaps after a catastrophe of sorts, who knows, maybe Japanese capital using the Yakuza as a leverage might try to horn in there, perhaps manipulating very sincere people in a cynical fashion. But again, a group of people whose cause is noble, but they've been championed by the UNPO. Who knows? After some sort of devastating collapse, we will see what happens. But that wraps up For the Record program number 616, Side 2. The title of the broadcast, Going Native, Part 3, subtitled Homeland Insecurity. This is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2007. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.